And welcome to another episode of Three Men in a War Game. My name is Paul, and I've recently discovered the joy of Nurgle. I'm joined by Chris. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm alive.
You're alive? As you should say, that beats the alternative, right?
It does, I think so.
wait until...
I hope so.
Wait until I get some Nurgle into your Stormcast, then you won't be so alive. You'll be poxridden, and then I'll also drive them into your Blood Angels, too.
No. They're like pretty angels.
Yeah, well, not for long. They're going to be disease-ridden and pox-ridden, and it's going to be amazing.
Heresy, sir.
Chris and I are also joined by Kevin. How are you doing tonight, Kevin?
I am dead.
Excellent.
Just kidding. Alive and well.
I mean, it was believable when all I could see is the corner of the rule book.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, guys.
That's all right. It's pretty hilarious.
You see nothing? For our viewers, we can all actually see each other. The bearded, ugly three of us. But, hey, speak for yourself.
Yeah, hey, I resemble that remark.
I have a rule book in front of my camera.
Yeah. And it's good because it's the rule book for the game that we'd like to spend our time talking about tonight, because it's mad hype season for Star Wars Legion. And, we figure we're what, a week and a half out from official release, because that's coming out on the 22nd of March.
Just a week.
Is it a week?
A week from tomorrow.
It comes out on a Thursday, a game day at Gamers Armory. Ooh, that's trouble. That's trouble.
Scott's gonna be happy.
Yeah, he is, because people are gonna be buying the crap out of it, most likely.
Is that what we're playing on Thursday?
Apparently, no. Maybe Friday. Might have to wait till Friday, paydays and all that stuff. But anyway, so yeah, we wanted to. We figured tonight would be a great time to get into the hype and talk a little bit about this game, since the rules came out probably a week or so ago on Fantasy Flight.
Stora's got the demo kits too.
Yeah, and they released both the Learn to Play and the Rules Reference, which Fantasy Flight does for all of their games these days, probably for, the past 3 or 4 years they've been doing the two books. Mm-hmm. Usually with the Learn to Play, you can get your starter game in and teaches you all the basics, and then the Rules Reference goes a lot more in-depth into everything.
Yeah, this Learn to Play is actually the most comprehensive Learn to Play I think they've ever done. The Rules Reference, honestly, you can just use when things come up that you need to resolve. You really don't need to read it if you do the Learn to Play and then the advanced rules of the Learn to Play. It's probably the best Learn to Play guide they've done.
You know, I don't know that I got too much into the advanced actions, actually, now I'm looking at it, because I'm so used to their games, their books ending at that point, that I started going through the Rules Reference, which the Rules Reference is just basically a glossary. I don't know how much time you've gotten to look at it.
It's a glossary with a very good index. It's actually, as a person who loves indexes, it's a pretty damn good index.
God, and you play Malifaux?
I know, it's horrible.
Because that is one of the worst things they did.
Worst indexes, yeah.
Yes, and you know, it's interesting because the little handbook is much better than the big book, and it's still terrible.
I only use the little book. Big book are you talking about?
the one with all the fluff.
I know the 2E book.
Yeah, the one that doesn't have the index.
Right.
But yeah, so as I'm thinking about this and looking through it, I don't want to necessarily just go through and read all the rules to our listeners, because that might be excessively boring, and they probably have done that anyway. But
this is the episode that helps you count the sheep and go to sleep.
No, I don't want anybody going to sleep. Stay awake. But what one of my first questions is for you guys, because I was thinking about it as I was going through, what strikes you as something cool from this rule set?
All right, so I'm going to go first because I think I have maximum hype mode, and I think I'm the only one of the three of us that has actually played a full game.
Yes, you've played a full game, you've done the demo.
There's pictures on Twitter if Paul posted them, it's for real, I played it.
Yeah, he has played it, and he, you know, way back when last August he was called me and was basically like, get this game!
Yeah, I demoed it at Gen Con and it was good. Yeah. So, I like it a lot. I'm a few days past my demo, and I'm a little less hot than I was right away. Because, like, you know, after you hype yourself up for a year for something, you get really excited, and you play it, and then it's like Christmas morning, right? Like, you open the present, you're super hyped, and then a couple days later, you're like, some pretty cool stuff. And I'm not saying I'm not being appreciative. It's a great rule set. I just want to make sure that as hype as I get in the next 10 minutes, I will unhype and talk about the things that aren't great and are, you know, kind of wonky or whatever. So now, Paul, your question. Cool things about this game.
Yes.
The first thing I'm going to talk about is the setup of a game. The setup of this game is amazing. If you guys have the rulebook, you can turn to page 24. This is people listening and the people that are here. So I'll give you a second. And we'll pause for posterity, page 24 of the Learn to Play Guide. All right. So in this game, one of the things you do is you deal out 9 cards from your cards. So, and the 9 cards will go out in 3 rows. One row is going to be the objectives for the game. One row is going to be the deployment for the game. And one row is going to be the battlefield condition for the game. And you're like, Kevin, what do you do these 3 rows? Well, the thing that's really sick about it is once you sort of get your deployment, or once you determine who the first player is, and that's based on points and stuff like that, what you do is you take turns pulling these cards. Each player gets to pull 2 of them. And if you're just listening and you haven't done it, it's kind of hard to understand. This is one of those things you really have to feel it to understand how it works. But the way that it is you're playing this kind of game of chicken with your opponent, because you get to look at all 9 of these options. And let's say the deployment you want is the furthest to the right. You have to pull the cards from the left. So if you want that deployment, the only way you can get it is pulling both deployments. So you have to pull the leftmost deployment and then the middle deployment if you want that rightmost deployment, which could cut you off from other options that you want because you might want a certain objective.
And you're alternating which ones you're not choosing.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes. And so you might take the deployment like, and then just pray for your opponent to take the other one. You're like, please take the other one because I don't want to have to take that because I want to go to the second objective or whatever.
Right.
So it's this mind game that happens back and forth just from the outset of the game on choosing what objective you're going to play, how you're going to deploy, and what the battlefield conditions are going to be. And it is amazing.
So really symbolic of choosing where you're fighting.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And my opponent, my good buddy and henchman for Weird here, Aaron, he told me this is actually a mechanic that comes from Dust Warfare, and it's his favorite part of Dust Warfare. So any Dust Warfare players out there, you're probably like, yeah, this is old hat. I don't care. Nobody played that game. And a ton of people are going to play this game, and this system is awesome, and I'm glad they carry it forward because it is really cool. And now I'm going to let you guys talk about what you think about this.
Well, for me, well, Chris looks like he's reading, so we'll get him to in a minute. But for me, I think one of the most exciting things for me, and this is beyond setup, is the extreme variability you can get in power based on dice rolling. You know, you're not just dealing with dice that are 1 through 6, you know, since you're dealing with dice with multiple images on them, you can have dice that either have less successes or more successes, or even, you know, more crits. So you can really get some variability in the power of different units or models based on those dice.
It really makes the models feel thematic that they have individual dice. And then the thing to let the players know, too, is that the attack dice are all on D8s and the defense dice are all on D6s. And the defense dice come in 2 colors, red and white. The red dice are pretty good. It's 50-50 that you're going to block something. The white dice are not so good.
Yeah, those are the Stormtrooper dice, huh?
Yeah, the white dice are bad news.
Like what, one maybe 2 successes on them or something like that?
Yeah, two successes and a surge, where the red dice are 3 successes and a surge. Now, a surge is blank for most things, right? Like, you can only use defense surges if your character has a defense surge.
Right.
But either way, the white dice are no fun to roll, man. You're a very good odds of getting hit. And then the attack dice come in white, red, and black. And that is the cascade of awesomeness. It's white, our Stormtrooper dice. It's only Stormtroopers are so precise. Red is the next level up. And then black are like Darth Vader swinging his lightsaber.
Right.
When you roll black dice, ship dies.
Yeah, which is a very cool way that not a lot of other games focus. You know, a lot of other games are going to be like, oh, add another die or take a die away. But to have those individual die, that's something I like. And, you know, they did that in the role-playing game that Fantasy Flight put out. Not so much in X-Wing, but Armada has that kind of same mechanic as well.
Yep, Armada does, and you're right. The Star Wars RPG and it's the Genesis system that you're thinking of. The Fantasy Flight Genesis system, which Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay used, and then Star Wars used, and then they made it to a system or a setting agnostic.
Yeah,
has that same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's and that's definitely one of the things that I'm most excited about. Just seeing how that develops between, you know, even just combining the different types of die. Being able to have, like, two white die and a red die, or you know...
Oh, it's awesome, man. So, like, let's say you have the Stormtroopers, and I didn't play with the Imperials in my game, I played with Rebels, but, you know, one of the Stormtrooper special units is a rocket launcher, and the Stormtroopers, you're like, hey, Stormtroopers, you got a bunch of white die, I'm not even tripping, right? Like, I have my Rebel Troopers, and I got dodge tokens, and those dodge tokens regenerate, like, you ain't shit, I'm gonna be fine. And then you realize there's a rocket launcher troop, and there's gonna be a shitload of red dice getting rolled or black dice getting rolled at you, and you get real scared.
Right.
That's how it should be, right? Like, you see your opponent scoop up those black dice, and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so, I mean, I think that's really cool. I think that's just going to be a really good system for a miniatures game because it gives you so much variability. How about you, Chris? What are you excited about?
All right, so for our listeners' edification, I don't read rules. Paul teaches me.
It's true. He didn't even read the Age of Sigmar rules before we started playing.
That's what, like two pages? I'll just put it out there. So I don't know as much from a rules standpoint as you guys do because YouTube hasn't had a lot of videos on this yet. But from what I have read, what I'm kind of excited to look about is the fact that it feels like you could have a lot of different game experiences every time you go into a different game because of the command cards. And that's one of the things I really like about like games like Shadespire. You have a lot there, even though it's the same decks, you can build the decks, you can put one of you in there. As you draw the cards, it's a different game experience each time. And I really enjoy those kind of feelings from games. Those make it entertaining for me because even though I'm bringing the same stuff, I can have a different experience every single time I play the game. And I really enjoy that. So that would be one of the things that I think I'm looking forward to with trying this game out.
It's that variable that we talked about with Age of Sigmar and the open war cards.
Exactly, 100%. And I think that's why, for me, you know, open war may be like the only way that I play. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be because we already know I'm not playing that game, you know, hardcore competitively. So for me, having that random encounter, random chance every single time we play a game, that's what makes it fun and entertaining for me.
Yeah, and the command cards, that's, so I talked about the defining the battlefield as a really cool thing, but my favorite thing about this game is the command cards. It is an amazing system, because you're playing this, like it's one of the best mind games, I think, in any war game. Some people may, you know, disagree with me, but I love, like, you'll understand when you start playing, too, and you realize you need to go fast. But if you want to go fast, that means you don't necessarily get to choose what you're going to be able to activate. And then you have to activate troops at random.
Right.
Oh, my God. It is so clutch. It is great. And these powers that the things give you, like the Vader's super thematic one, is that he can take damage to activate twice on one of his cards. Oh, it's so good.
Very dark side.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's super dark side. And it not only like is it really thematic, it's like heinous when you realize what a dark side player could do with it, because having two activations with Vader is ridiculous. Like, so one activation with Vader, if he's got, so you guys can see this, if he has force push, so this happened to me. Aaron walks Vader into range where he can pull my rebel troopers over a barricade.
Oh, half
force push, pulls them toward himself, and then walks toward my guys, and Vader has a charge ability, so if he walks into base contact, he gets a free swing. So, like, what I'm imagining, right, is, like, my guys are sitting there bunkering down, getting ready to shoot at Vader, and he just pulls them all from behind the barricade, and then kills four of them in a lightsaber swing.
You're reenacting Rogue One.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's exactly what happened on the tabletop. And then you got to activate Vader again. So,
oh, jeez.
Super brutal. It's super brutal, and it's exactly what you want him to do. And I learned my lesson. Don't position your rebel troopers like a moron.
Well, see, and that's what I like. It's like stuff like that, even from watching the YouTube videos and reading, you can see that the very Star Wars type actions happening. You know, even going through the rule book, certain characters, I'm assuming right off the bat it's going to be Luke and Darth Vader, have the deflect ability, where if you miss a shot against them, there's a chance that it bounces back and wounds your own guys. Which is awesome!
Yeah, it's really great.
I mean, how can a Star Wars fan not be excited about that?
Yeah, and I kind of got that from watching. I watched, when we first started talking about Legion, I went out and looked, and I looked at the videos that they posted from Adepticon, and I know the developers that game that were there, that's what they were talking about. Like, they wanted this to make sure that the characters, especially the iconic characters, felt like their role from Star Wars, that they matter, that they're there, they're turning the tides of the battle, they're these heroes that are, you know, just giants on the battlefield.
Yep.
And being able to have Vader go off and do that that sounds amazing to me. I don't know why anyone else would play the Rebellion.
Because you have Luke to do it?
Oh, that little whiny so-and-so.
Also, they have way more consistent damage output, and they're hardier.
I can see that.
Because they've got the spirit of the Rebellion.
Yes. Yep,
exactly. They hunker in. It's weird that the Empire is like the glass cannon faction, but... That is how it actually turns. Although, I mean, I guess that's not so true. Vader's really hard to kill. But everything else, if the Empire player is not careful, it all dies real easy.
It's because Stormtrooper armor doesn't protect you from shit.
Yeah.
Why do they even wear it?
No, that's not true. No spoilers here, but in the last season, or was the last season of Rebels, that the Stormtrooper armor actually did something?
Yes. Yep.
I'm going to spoil it for anybody, but... Yeah.
All right, so we talked about things that we liked. I'm curious as to what you are hesitant about. Because every time you get a new rule set, there's always something that makes you go, I'm not so sure. So,
yeah.
So, Chops, why don't you...
I'll take it away.
Yeah, go for it.
Because I've been overly positive about this game. And I've been a Fantasy Flight defender for a long time because... I was a lapsed miniature gamer, and I've always played board games, and I've always loved Fantasy Flight, and not really care that their games always have gobs of chits. oh my god, so much crow. But I've come to appreciate, as a war gamer, that I like a clean battlefield. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't like a lot of counters. I like the battlefield to be my miniatures and my terrain, you know? This game, let me tell you, has a ton of chits and shit that you have to keep track of, and I think once the rule set is better for me, like what I'll probably end up doing is just sleeving my cards and writing shit on them anyway, like I already do for Malifaux and Guild Ball and every other game that I play.
Yeah.
But it's a problem. I really was a defender for a long time. I was like, it's not that bad. There's not gonna be that many tokens. There are so many tokens. And it is, for me, a major downside, because the way that the game wants you to keep track of the stuff is by, you know, putting the tokens next to your miniatures, and then they're on the battlefield clogging it up. It's not great.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a pretty minor complaint, I think. On the whole, if the only thing I have to complain about is that I don't like the presentation of status effects, it's not that bad.
Right.
The core mechanics are solid, and the mechanics that the tokens are conveying, I mean, the tokens are great to help remind you. So they serve a purpose. It's just, you know, a lot of clutter.
Right. So for me, one of the things that I'm super concerned about, and I didn't get enough to read it, but I'm concerned that there's, like, psychology in the game as far as models fleeing and having to rally and stuff like that. Especially, yeah, here, panic. You know, there's so many games that have gotten rid of that as a mechanic. And it's made the games easier, like 40K and Fantasy, taking away units running for their lives. And beside it being making a game feel bulky, and until it came out of games, like even War Machine, I didn't realize how bulky it was. But I was also thinking about when you watch Star Wars movies, you never see a unit run, you know?
That's true.
You never see them run away. And that was kind of one of my things thinking about that, was that it's not a thing in the movies. Why is it a thing in the game?
Yeah, you're right. Even the Gungans didn't run.
The Gungans didn't run. The only person you see run is Han when he's faced with a room full of stormtroopers. And depending on which version you're watching, the number of stormtroopers are variable.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you. The suppression system feels a bit like the pinning system in Bolt Action. It's not the same. The mechanic's not identical, but it's got influence from it. So if you're familiar with the way that works, once you get fired on, you take panic tokens, and panic tokens make you less efficient in combat. And then once you get equal to or more of these panic tokens to your panic value, then your units may actually flee when they activate. And fleeing means moving their walk distance toward the nearest battlefield edge and then stopping. To explain the mechanic.
Right. See, and that's so old school 40K or old school fantasy.
Yeah, I think I would have liked it a lot more if it was just the suppression mechanic, where when you took enough suppression tokens, you became less effective.
Yeah.
I like that, right? I like the idea that a unit under fire can't do as much.
Sure,
that
because you're...
feels good to me.
I mean, but you could represent that by taking dice away.
Yeah, well, the way it does it is that you get one fewer action. If you have the token and you fail the check, then you have one fewer action for the turn. And I like that. I'm gonna partially disagree with you and say I like that aspect, but I'm also not fond of the running away.
Yeah.
Especially because if there's an objective near the side of the board, right, and you hold the objective, and then all of a sudden you flee in terror, it's very possible that you might lose your entire unit.
Right.
Even if you have all six of them, because you passed your defense check, so you didn't actually use any units. If your leader walks partially off the side of the battlefield,
you're done. Yep. Yeah. See, and I have a strong aversion to that. You know, I want my guys to be into the fight. You know, not running. Yeah. And that was,
I gotta say, having experienced what I'm talking about, I agree with you on that point. It feels bad.
Yeah, and it's so much out of your control, and it's such a big loss. I mean, it's like, again, to bring it back to fantasy, it's like back in the old days when you would have a unit of Grots run, and then suddenly your entire orc army ran off the board.
Yeah, especially because you can't do anything but take them. Like, if there is a net hit on an attack, you take suppression. Like, there's nothing you can do about it.
Right. I mean, it seems like it's pretty easy with the dice that you're rolling.
No, yeah, if you get fired on, you're probably going to get suppressed. I mean, it's like Bolt Action, right?
Right.
If a unit fires on you, you're probably getting a pin.
Right. And again, you know, tying it back to the movies, you know, you had a hallway full of guys facing down Darth Vader, and sure, they had trouble getting the door open, but they weren't, you know, they were holding their own, you know.
They were fighting back.
Yeah, they were fighting back.
I mean, it's in the same way when, you know, he storms the ship in episode 4. They sit there and they're shooting and they're fighting against him. They're not running.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So I have an issue with it on top of, which, you know, I got to the thematic issue by thinking about the game mechanic of it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and just agree with you. I wish they had handled that a little differently. I don't know if that's going to affect my overall enjoyment of the game and cause me to play the game less, but I agree that it's a weaker point of the design.
Yeah, and I mean, it might turn out to be insignificant. Again, that's one of those things you can't really tell until you're actually playing it. But, you know, if you're commonly losing your units and they're running off the table, it won't feel good. That's a negative play experience. And it's not the fault of the other player either. That's a core mechanic issue.
Saying that one of the factions is like a glass cannon. If they're getting shot at and they're dying, then they're going to be running off the table left and right. That's not a good game experience for somebody.
But I will say this, though. There is one of the ways that the game counters it is that if any of your troops that are within, I think it's either range 3 or range 4 of your general, can use your general's leadership ability. So, like, with Vader, as an example, Vader has no fear. Like, if you look at his card, he doesn't even have a value there. He cannot run. He will not run. It's like that panel from the comics, right? Like, they're like, Vader, you're surrounded. He's like, I'm only surrounded by dead men.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's that's like how his card is. But he, if your stormtroopers are near him, they also will not run.
Right.
That totally counterbalances. And Luke's leadership is high, too. It's like 4 or 5. So your rebel troopers that are near Luke have to take a lot of fire before they run. So I think it may be less of a concern than you think it is, but when it happens, it does feel better.
Yeah, and like I said, that'll be a actual playing it to have that comparison. But it's my hype concern, if you will, since we're still in hype era of the game.
Yeah. And I can't tell you it feels bad because it happened to me in my game. Vader killed Luke, and then my AT-RT ripped Vader apart. But at that point, I had lost Luke, and I had some rebel troopers that had been accumulating these tokens because they were holding an objective and defending. And as soon as Luke died, I failed a check, and they ran away off the board. It was
Jeez. So bad. At least
I could have not lost Luke, and it would have been fine.
I mean, at least at that point, like, again, realistically versus, in-world thematics, you could justify a unit going, oh shit, our commander just got torn to pieces, by his dad. Let's get the fuck out of here. Yeah, I mean, I can see that. But again, that's real world versus in-universe thematics.
Yeah, so I think it's one of those things where I think you'll have to play it. I agree that it's not my favorite part of the game, but I also think it'll be less emphasized because of the fact that your troops can inherit your leader's leadership.
Sure. Well, Chris, I know we've been bouncing my concern around. How about you?
So I made it to page 10 of the learn to play rules. My problem with the game already started with how to figure out who goes first. The rules just feel overly complicated for no reason. I should not have to have like 3 different scenarios to figure out who goes first. And because you draw your cards, who's ever got the lowest pips, it goes first. Cool. If you tie, you do this. Well, why can't we just do that to begin with? If that's where you're going to go anyways, just make it easier.
Well, let me actually clarify this rule, because we're not talking about who goes first in the game and has the initiative.
Sorry, who sets up?
Well, that's actually the command cards and the pips on the command cards have to do with a player initiative in the turn, in the game turn. And the way that works is actually, I have to look and see the page 10 thing that you're talking about, but I think the command cards, though, is you play one of those in secret, right? Like, you are going to look at a command card and you pick it in secret, and then you play it face down and you both reveal. This is actually, I think, once you play this, you'll realize it's one of the coolest mechanics, because if you play a low pip card, you don't have as much flexibility with what you're going to do. And if you play a high pick card, you have more flexibility, but you might have to go second in a turn and not get that, like, alpha strength that you need. Versus if you both play the same card, you roll a dice and it's 50-50. I don't know if that's the...
I don't think it's 50-50, Chops. I think it's whoever has the first player token, essentially, or whatever Fantasy Flight tends to call.
Defense dice...
So it's whoever has the token rolls the dice, but that dice is 50-50 for defense and non-defense results.
Right, if you roll the shield, then you get to choose.
And there are 3 shields on the red die.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And it is a 6-sided dice.
Right, yep. So it's
like I said, I don't read rules.
Yep. It's fine. I think you'll like it. I think after you do it a couple rounds, you'll be like, oh, this isn't so bad. It's pretty intuitive. But yeah, I guess you're right. There's a lot going on there.
Well, it's like there's a lot. So like the activation phase with choosing a unit, the player, you've got your in the command phase. You put out your order tokens. You've put those out. So that's cool. Like, I get that. But then you start pulling your order. You choose your units for activation in the activation phase. If you pull out a token that doesn't have a rank that's matching one of your units, you just pull another one. So why not just activate the unit?
All right. Why so the old tokens? Yeah. All right. So here I'll explain. So this is I can actually break this down really really concisely. So you only have tokens that match the units you hired, right? So if you have two troops, you have your leader, you have your special ops or whatever, right? The only way that you're going to pull one randomly is if the unit died during the turn. So let me just explain how this works, right? Because the first thing you do is you play that command card, and the command card will tell you exactly how many things you can give orders to. So an example will be, there's a two pip card for Luke, I think, that's put an order on Luke and two trooper units. So what that allows you to do is it lets you to put face up tokens next to two trooper units and next to Luke, and then the rest of your tokens have to get shuffled face down. Mm-hmm. And now, when it's your turn, you have a choice. You can either pick any one of the ones that are face up that you want to activate. So that's that activation control that you get. Or you pick one randomly from the stack. And if you pick one randomly from the stack, you just have to activate whatever it is. And the reason, the only way you get a blank one is if one of your dudes got shot off the board, and then you flip that token over. And in that case, that unit died. I can't activate it. Let me flip the next one. And the reason it does that is because imagine if it didn't, right? That would feel so bad if your unit got shot off the table and then you pulled it and then you were like, oh, I lose my turn because you shot my shit up. Like, that would suck so bad.
Okay, so essentially these tokens are just outside of the ones that you choose by giving them orders. It's just essentially picking, controlling which units you're activating. It doesn't give you the control of it.
Yeah, it's fog of war, right? You can your general can only give so many orders based on the command that you picked, and then the rest of your units activate at whatever order you shuffled.
Okay, all right. Well, and I'd have to probably see that played because I mean I don't understand why that would be a thing, but you know I've not played the game yet, so.
Well, because it's representing your ability to command your troops, so you have to be close to your commander orders.
I disagree with that. In a sci-fi game, in a world of you know, Star Wars, we have comms. So a general is going to be able to relay orders over the radio. So yes, you will be able to do that. So to me, if we were going with the realistic aspect of war, you can't control it in that aspect. So I don't know if I agree with that.
And it is cool though. And the reason they do this is because of the ability to have things like comm jammers. And so the range that you have is very far. It's three inch range
off the four ruler.
Yeah, right. Which is huge. I think there's 6 inches each, right? So you're talking about a 2 foot radius from your, or like a 4 foot radius, right? It's 2 feet off either side of your general that you can activate, that you can issue orders off of. And there are also abilities that let you reduce that range to one, right? And that, I think that's why they get it. Is because they wanted to have that ability to have things like comm jammers and make it so that communication is harder to establish. And I think, you know, once you get to playing it, especially if you're careful about how you position your commander, and that's another thing, right? It forces sound tactics. Like, if you want to be able to issue orders to all your units, you have to deploy in a way that you're in the correct range to be able to do it. And then the other thing it represents too, right, is that, you know, in the heat of battle, you can only issue so many orders at once. Like, your general, who is a battlefield general, like, out there in the front lines, can't necessarily be like, you do this, you do this, you do this, because they have to focus on fighting themselves, right? So they can only issue so many commands before that's the, you know, the extent of their ability, and they have to focus on the fight.
You underestimate my power.
Well, and, you know, thinking thematically as well with other games, you know, you're kind of omnipotent as to what's going on the battlefield. You know, whereas this is kind of putting you more into the battlefield role.
Right. You have to rely on like the whims of fate a little bit more.
Yeah.
I actually enjoy that mechanic a lot, and I think a lot of people will enjoy that mechanic once they experience it. It makes a lot of sense, and it makes for some really fun tactical decision making. Like, it really forces sound tactics.
Now, do you have to stack them in a pile, or can you do a dice bag?
You can do a dice bag. Okay. We did bags.
Okay, as long as it's randomized.
The rules even say you can do it in a bag.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, you can pull them out of the bag.
That's what I thought, but I figured I'd ask anyway.
You can always do like conniving shit too, right? Like, you're gonna have a turn, right, where you might bring three troopers and a support unit and your leader. Right, and then if you choose a thing that's like activate your leader and one support unit, then you know your three that are in the stack are your three troopers, and if you pull a trooper, you can activate any one you want, right?
Right.
So again, it just forces critical thinking and tactical thinking.
Which is what all good games do. If you have to make that tactical decision, that's where the quality of the game is.
Yeah, I think I think one of the first statements I said in the podcast is it's a very sound rule set. It's very good.
Yeah. Maybe a little bulky in some places. Thanks.
Hey, you're making me teach you Sigmar, and I don't know the rules, so.
It's four pages, Chris. It's four pages.
Four pages in the basic rule set, then you got the general stuff. That thing's
two whole books here, buddy. Thanks.
That's like 90 pages.
It is, like, it's more than that, actually. But, so hype level, guys, that we've talked about a little bit. Paul, where's your hype at? Scale of 1 to Spinal Tap.
So, this is a hard one, because I've been waffling. I've been waffling on it. I'm super stoked that it's... My wife is sitting over there looking at me going, it's Star Wars. Fuck you, you're excited.
Really?
So that's part of my hype, is that it's Star Wars and it's going to be amazing. There's just some bulkiness to the rule set that kind of makes me go, oh, as a miniatures game, it might be a little bulky, but it's fucking Star Wars. So on the Star Wars level, it's like a 11 out of 10. The bulkiness of the rules, as far as that goes, gets me down to like an 8. But my wife just doesn't believe any of that, other than just the it's an 11.
That's solid hype, man.
Yeah, man, I am. I'm hyped. I am. I'm excited about it. I really am. I just like I said earlier, my biggest concern is the psychology aspect of the game.
My biggest concern is my pockets.
So
Carter, where's your hype level?
I think I'm in the same area as Paul, as a degenerate Star Wars degenerate. My hype is definitely at an 11. But I've never played a Fantasy Flight game before. My only interaction with it was the Star Wars dice game that they just came out with, Destiny. Wasn't too impressed with them as a company and how they released it. But I do hear that it's been fixed and it's doing fine. It's actually doing well. So I don't know. I'm gonna probably have to put myself at a 6. Just because I only know Fantasy Flight based off of reputation, so I don't know anything else beyond there.
Cool. That's fair. It's a fair assessment. I would say before my demo, I was at an 11, like way up there. And you know, having played it, I'm right with you, Paul. I think I'm like an 8.5, 9. And I think part of my 8.5, 9 is because I so love Malifaux, right? And because I love Malifaux the way I do, I just don't know how much Legion I'm going to get to play. Because, you know, my main night to play minis is Monday, and if I'm not crushing people with gremlins, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
So, you can crush people with stormtroopers.
Yeah, I guess so. And I mean, we just got confirmed from our local game store. He's going to buy 3 of the Ord kits so we can have a 24-player league going on. Because we have one of the record pre-orders for our region.
Okay.
So there's going to be a lot of people there. I think he said he's anticipating that we're going to have like 14 boards set up.
On wow.
Opening weekend. Yeah, man. So 14 wow. tables of Legion.
That's pretty impressive.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's pretty great.
28 people.
Yep. So we're pretty excited here. Aaron, I think, is still excited. But again, you know, I love Malifaux, and I think it would be very hard for any game right now to take that spot as my number one game. But I think this has a really, really solid contention for, you know, number two with Age of Sigmar. Those two games, I think, will, you know, things I'll be alternating between.
Well, you know, the other thing too, compared to Malifaux or any other game, is that there's a built-in huge fan base for it.
Yeah,
they're doing the deployment of this right. I mean, they're releasing it the same exact week that the Last Jedi comes out on Blu-ray. You know, so the hype for Star Wars is going to be real, even though, you know, Last Jedi aside of the stupid reviews of everybody else on the internet, you know, it's they're doing it right. They're marketing it right for that. They're releasing it the same time as a movie. It's going to be good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, some people were. I think it was Scott. over at the game store was saying he thought that they were missing out on not having it released when the movie came out in theaters. But Blu-ray isn't a bad pick. Chops, that dog is climbing all over you.
Love me. I want to be a part of that podcast.
For the people that can't see, my dog is smothering me.
No, I will, although I will have to disagree with Scott. I think it's a smart move. We saw what Fantasy Flight did when a movie released with Star Wars Destiny because it came out at the same time as what Force Awakens.
Rogue One.
That's what it was. Their production, they couldn't keep up with the demand.
Yeah.
At all when they released it. So I think they're doing a smart move by not doing it with the movie, so that way they can make sure that yes, they've got the Star Wars hype. It's coming. You know, the Blu-ray is coming out. They've been leaking all these behind the scene features for it to get people interested in it. You know, they're doing the right thing. They won't have as much production issues because the hype isn't that high, but you're still doing it during a Star Wars week.
Yeah, and it's actually just between Last Jedi and Solo.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good time to release it, I think.
Yeah, I think they did a good move.
I think also I heard in the grapevine that almost the entire shipment has been pre-ordered. So if they had released it back in December, you know, we're talking about having another, 8 weeks of production? So,
right.
You know, there's going to be more copies in the wild.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that was part of their
yeah, that was part of the plan. Calculus.
For yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So, last topic for Legion.
Yeah.
So we can wrap it up. What are you looking forward to in the future of Legion?
Oh, future of Legion? I'm going to just jump right in, and I'm looking forward to new factions, right? Separatist, Jedi, First Order, Resistance, Bounty Hunters.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, all of that. That's what's got me really excited because, you know, we all know Chops absolutely loves the prequels. And, you know, they're seeing a droid army, that would just be badass.
Yeah, I need a droid army. Don't listen to Paul. I don't love the prequels. The prequels are just fine, but I would kill somebody in front of their own mama for a droid army.
Yeah.
Give me it, man.
Yeah.
I want all that shit. I want the droid tanks. I want General Grievous. Yeah, I want all of it.
Yep. Dooku. All of that stuff would be absolutely amazing in this game. You know, seeing, you know, a droid army against First Order would be great. Like a Count Dooku, Kylo Ren duel would be amazing. You know, if you're not going to have eras, like they did away with them in Imperial Assault. So you might as well just have everybody going at it.
I agree. Yeah, we might be able to finally figure out who wins, Maul or Vader.
Hey, there you go.
Ooh, and would it be Spider Maul or
no
regular old movie
we're
Maul?
We're going regular Maul.
Yeah.
Although, trust me, I love Clone Wars Maul. Darth Maul is like number two. I mean, Vader will always have the top spot, but Maul's definitely close there for me. And I would love to see that.
Well, let me tell you, Chris, even just you bringing that up even got Aubrey's attention, and she looked at me and went, ooh, that would be great to figure out.
Yeah. I mean, because I know that I think they finally did it in the comics, but unfortunately that's no longer canon. So we will have to see what happens now. Maybe Star Wars Legion will figure that out for us.
Yeah.
Maybe it will. For me, my number one, droid separatists. Give me that shit. We talked about it. But number two, Death Watch.
Ooh.
Yeah. Give me that Death Watch stuff. Even if it's just a squad of Death Watch that you use for a Merc faction, I need it.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to like specialized units like the 501st or the 501st.
Yeah, for sure.
Bringing in those, but I mean, Paul, you got me thinking about the Bounty Hunters, bringing those as like a mercenary, like 1-2.
Right.
You know, models into the army, that's definitely got my attention.
Right, and I mean, even with what they're using now, right, the Rebellion era of Star Wars, you're still looking at Sabine, you're still looking at the ability to bring in Mandalorians. I mean, there's so much you can have there.
Like the Death Watch.
Yeah. I mean, get the Darksaber out there. And
again, Bounty Hunters were a huge aspect of the Rebellion.
Yep.
Or, so, you know, just, you could have a whole Black Sun faction, right?
Amazing. Yeah.
Just like Trandoshans and like, you know, like all sorts of stuff as with like a Black Sun armor. That'd be so badass.
Yep.
There's so much they can do. As long as they launch this game and support it, there's so much they can do with it.
Yeah, as long as they don't Rune Wars it.
Yeah, that's the only scary thing as far as that goes.
They already did kind of Rune Wars it, though, the two factions that launched. But, I mean, this is Fantasy Flight still, I think, they're still learning how to war game. Rune Wars, though, from what I understand, because we do have two guys that play at my store, it's really good now that it has four factions, but it took them too long to get to that magic number.
Well, you also have to look at, I mean, how much of it is Fantasy Flight and how much of it is Lucas. Lucas controls their IP very strictly.
That's true.
Yeah, and, no, I know, see, I would think that was
Rebellion
Fantasy Flight.
Rebellion and Empire are the core tenets of Star Wars.
Yeah, see, and it's going to be how quickly they get out of their commanders, I think, at this point. The fact that they already have Leia and Veers announced is helpful.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm excited. I'm very excited for the future of the game. I just hope that, like, we don't get the bloat in games like X-Wing, where, you know, it's just like two factions, and the game is just like continuously growing. You know, the X-Wing is running into the like privateer press problem now, right? Where there's
just
like,
there's
so
too
many
much
units, and they just have to get bigger and bigger rather than having more factions.
Right.
So I hope Fantasy Flight wises up, you know, and gets with that, you know, that magic like seven faction number or whatever. You know, I think that is the magic number. All the, you know, a lot of the best games somewhere between 7 and 11 factions, so
yep.
if they roll it that way, I think they will have years and years and years of success with the system.
Yeah, and I think the other thing they need to be careful of is locking you into purchases, you know, like with X-Wing, where you have certain upgrades and stuff that only comes in certain packs, but it applies to other models or other factions.
They've already confirmed that that's not the case.
Okay,
so.
Good.
All the cards and stuff that you'll get from the like units are faction based.
Okay.
So they're not going to be cross faction.
Cool. So they are considering that unlike board gamers or card gamers, mini gamers tend to be single faction guys.
Yeah, but also, I mean, there is still the aspect that I wanted. There's a black side to this. There are a bleak side to this coin, I should say, and that's that. Even that being true, if you want an upgrade for your faction, you might not necessarily be interested in this mini pack.
Right.
You can't just buy the cards. You still have to buy those minis if you want those upgrades. But, you know, at least it's not as heinous as that you have to buy everything.
Right, exactly. That would worry me more. I'd keep it in faction, great. You know.
Yeah, that's how it is.
Cross-faction upgrades just gets a little crazy, and especially when you're dealing with, you know, like the AT-ST at $50 or whatever.
You know. They're not going to make you do that. They've already confirmed that
when you buy the
upgrades are faction only.
Yeah, a $14 X-Wing model is different than, you know, an AT-ST. Because if you're only playing Rebels and you have to buy an AT-ST, that's pretty crazy.
I want my AT-AT now that I've seen the scale of that ST, man.
They're not going to make it.
Hey, imagine First Order Gorillas.
See, I think... I really think, honestly, if this game takes off, they're going to do a Armada version, where it's going to be all vehicular.
I don't know. Do you think? I mean, I don't think the Rebellion has enough heavy armor to do that. I mean, I think in the Clone Wars era, you can definitely get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
But in a First Order era, First Order Resistance and Rebellion Empire, I don't know if you could do that, because the Resistance and the Rebellion, they just don't have a lot of heavy armor. It's mostly guerrilla and ground troops.
Sure, and then they're the horde army, right? You get them with 10 snow speeders.
Yeah, maybe, but those didn't really take them down either, except for Luke jumping in there with his lightsaber.
No, you just deploy the tow cable. But anyway, we're way off the rails now. Yeah, so I guess
crafting, man.
Yeah, so as everybody could see, we are excited about the possibilities of this game.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I wanted to succeed. I'm going in cautiously optimistic, never playing a Fantasy Flight game before, but I want this game to be good. I want a Star Wars minigame. I really do.
Who doesn't?
I don't think you're going to be disappointed. I think there's going to be things that you don't like, but there's things we don't like about every game, you know? Like, I've, again, unabashedly loved Malifaux. And as much as I love the game, god damn, vantage point rules can die in a fire.
well, I guess they can.
Oh, but, man.
You know, so there's going to be positives and negatives. Sure. My, like I said, I was at an 11, and I'm still at an 8.5, 9. I've played a game of being a few days past it. I think it's really good. And I think that everybody who loves miniatures games should be excited about it. Oh, I do have one more thing I want to say, because it addresses a specific concern that I've seen people, and it's about the quality of the plastic.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking about that.
It's good. So it's a Warlord Games quality. That's where I would put it. So if you've ever handled or put together anything Warlord's done, and I'm not saying it's Warlord detail. The detail level is higher. It's not quite to a Weird or Games Workshop, but it's much harder than anything Fantasy Flight's ever done. So okay. It's even harder than the Rune Wars plastic, because the Rune Wars skeletons and stuff, and some of the guys have pretty flimsy swords.
Mm-hmm.
And the plastic here is much harder. Again, think Warlord Games. If you've played Bolt Action or Gates of Antares or Pike and Shot or any of those games, it's that kind of quality plastic.
Yeah, I was worried about that, seeing some of the build videos. I mean, again, from the videos, the plastic looks
flimsy. Soft-ish. Okay. But it's not Rune Wars or board game quality.
Is it softer than Malifaux soft?
It is softer than Malifaux. Okay. I think Malifaux's got pretty hard plastic.
Yeah, compared to most other miniatures games, yeah, they do.
Yeah. I guess I'm just comparing it to GW, because that's what I've been building a lot lately.
It's not the gold standard. Yeah, right. No, not that.
But as long as it's better than P3 plastic, we're good.
I don't actually know P3 plastic. I know what you meant. It looks bad, though, right?
Yeah, that's basically resin. Like the resin of fine cast with maybe a little bit of plastic in it.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad.
It's fine. The plastic's fine. Nice. If you had a concern about the plastic, squash it. It's fine.
Okay. That's good to hear. That's good to know.
Yeah, that's what I'm excited to see. Thing.
And some of the long bits are going to be a little bendy. I'm not thinking they're going to be like flimsy, but they'll be a little bendy. But for the most part, it's very rigid. Like, I don't think you're going to be able to bend and crack paint, is what I'm saying, right? Like,
right.
It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, any game that you play with long bendy plastic or long plastic, it's going to have that level of bendiness to it. No matter GW does it, Malifaux does it. That's just the nature of plastic.
Right, and again, it's not as hard either. It's certainly nowhere near as hard as GW plastic, but it's also significantly better than board game plastic.
Like, good.
It's an entirely different class of thing.
That's good.
Well, and looking at the build instructions in the rule book, the infantry models seem pretty simple. You know, it all looks like two, maybe three pieces. Now the ATRT looks a little more complicated.
Yeah, it did.
And the speeder bikes too. They have some fiddly bits.
Yeah, but I mean, it looks like I could pick this up on a Thursday, and we could be like, you know, 20 minutes after opening the box, could probably be playing with glued together minis.
Not with the speeder bikes, I don't think.
I mean, aside from the speeder bikes and the ATRT, you know, with the infantry troops.
No, you're going to be a building. You're going to be fine.
About mold lines. How are the mold lines on them?
The models I had already been cleaned, and the guy who put them together is a very talented painter and modeler that works at the FLGS. So while they weren't painted, they were cleaned as if they were going to be painted, so I couldn't tell you.
Gotcha.
Got to find out on Thursday, Chris.
Well, I thought you said Friday.
Thursday, Friday, whatever.
Saturday, Aubrey, Saturday.
Oh, I'm just going to be a widow for, like, Star Wars, whatever, widow, forever.
Hey, it's not as bad as the WoW days.
Oh, God.
The mountains. Do I got to put Aubrey, can Paul come out and play?
Oh, my God. Yes, Chris.
All right, well, I guess that wraps us up for this one. So thanks for joining me, guys.
No problem. It's always fun.
Yeah. And for everybody else, thanks for listening. And Potter, plug the Twitter.
Plug the Twitter. Guys, like us. Find us on Twitter. We're at #3, Man Edit War Game. Go find us. Paul's been doing his best of posting up pictures and finding all the cool stuff that's going on, retweeting it for you guys so you can keep up to date with all of our shenanigans.
Try my best, and it's not a hashtag, it's an at sign.
An at sign.
Whatever. Social media, blah. I'll
try to get you some pictures of Ma Tuckett.
Yeah, man.
Bashing Wong into the ground this week.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, send pictures. I'll post them.
So. I'm green stuffing my Paladars for my Stormcast this weekend, so hopefully they'll get some.